5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
It's Pharrell on a bench in the biggest way possible, hanging out a bad seat, a broken eight, a bad apple with a bad attitude, hanging around a bunch of bad editors, bad taste, bad lot, bad dude, bad rep, bad attitude, bad vibes. It's the FOTB pod part two with Dr. Greg Galina, my ass doctor. Let's just get right down to it. There's no other way of looking at it. He is a colorectal specialist surgeon extraordinaire from New York City. He's very busy. Now, at some point in your life, you started a practice for colorectal, and you had decided that this might be an avenue that you would choose. At any point, did anyone try to deter you when you maybe said to your parents or your friends or your lover, your wife, that you wanted to specialize in rectums? I mean, you know, I get all worked up every time I have these conversations with you about asses. I mean, let's just get down to it. I mean, at some point, did you have that conversation? Like, I'm going to become a rectal surgeon. I am going to be the greatest rectal surgeon in the world. Like, at some point, you had to have that leap of faith and that conversation.
I got both sides of it. One side was, oh, it's great specialty. Oh, my God, you're going to help people, all that. And then I got the other side is like, well, you're crazy. What do you want to do that for? That is disgusting, was probably the most common comment I got.
Who said that to you?
You know, probably
everyone.
Yeah. Definitely some friends and relatives like, that is just vile and gross. Why do you want to do that with your life? And so what I tell people who want to know is, when you do surgical residency, right? Every surgical specialty has gross, disgusting, vile, foul stuff. It's just part of the deal. And it's what you sign on for. And you see it in every specialty, whether it be trauma or vascular surgery.
So when they cut
surgery,
someone open, it's gross.
I know you well enough to know you'll want some graphic examples.
Yes.
Yeah, of course. So vascular surgery, right? You get the people who, they don't have enough blood supply to their leg and their toes are dead, or their foot's like falling off, or there's, remembered from patients when I was in residency.
Like, so like artery problems.
Like maggots between their toes. Somebody's ass is not that bad. To me, right? To me, first of all, one of the great things is my patients, even friends and other people I know, are like, oh, I don't want you to see my ass. And I'm like, listen, I am fine with that. I'm okay with it. I just want you to know I'm going to see 15 of them today, and they all look exactly alike. There's a very small variety in what somebody's rear end looks like. You have a special tattoo or a unique scar, which you actually have a couple of.
I definitely have nice scars, right? What did you think when you stumbled into my life? Because I had had multiple ass surgeries when I came to you because, I mean, let's face facts. I had a massive genetic problem that I blame on my grandfather and my father. They gave me fissures and fistulas, basically as a entree, but as an appetizer, hemorrhoids. So it was like a three-pronged practice. You're dealing with colons one day, rectum, major surgery another. You know, you got all these different avenues you got to deal with. But I had to get fissures, fistulas, and hemorrhoids. What a great gift from my lineage of men in my family tree. Grandpa, thanks a lot. And I'm sure Grandpa got them from his dad and his grandpa. I mean, it had to have come down the pike somehow, Dr. Galena.
Well, we don't really know if hemorrhoids are truly genetic, but we think so. But yeah, you had pretty much the first half of the rectal textbook, the proctology textbook. You had all the chapters.
I had all chapters. I was a case study. It really brought back all of the med school studies and all your late nights.
The first time I saw you, you had had a couple of surgeries already, and your butt kind of looked a little bit like the Google Earth map of downtown Moscow.
So you're telling me that when you came in and saw me for the first time and you knew that I had problems because I had gone through two surgeons. I had already had two major ass surgeries. And I'll never forget the first one. It was brutal. So I had this surgery. And then I remember at night I would bend over on the bed and she would have to take this long 12-inch Q-tip. It was enormous. It was like the length of a golf club. And she would put this salve on it and she would go into my butt and she would roll it around and it was just covered in blood and pus and problems because I had had this major corrective surgery, right? And it was just awful. And I remember two things. One was the pain of going to the bathroom, trying to bust off a cable after that surgery was one of the most horrific, just tears in my eyes, pain. I would cry on the header. I literally was doing full pommel horse cables where I would hold my body off of the toilet seat in the air like five inches and I would squeeze out a yam. And then, you know, it was the worst. Just even trying to wipe was like hell fire. I mean, it was the absolute worst pain I'd ever been through in my life. And then I had later in the night, she's shoving this golf club in my ass full of ointment to, I guess, make it heal. Why in God's name would the first surgery I had, and you know exactly who did that surgery to me. Let's just leave names out of it. You know both of my ass surgeons. Do you believe that they were good ass surgeons?
Actually, yeah, I don't know them personally very well, but we see the same group of patients. It's just an area where the surgeries are challenging and difficult. And you had the most challenging problem we encounter in colorectal surgery is complex fistula. Complex fistula are the hardest things I deal with. From a surgical standpoint, it's more challenging than dealing with colon cancer. So fistulas and hemorrhoids and fistulas after hemorrhoid surgery are miserable problems, and they're really hard to deal with. And the guys who took care of you, actually, they did a pretty good job. It's just that you had very challenging disease, and it's one of those things that can make you crazy.
So I went from one surgeon, and, you know, the guy operates on me, and then a year later, they come back, and he sends me to another surgeon, another step up. This guy's like, I can't fix this. You have to go to a guy that's a specialist at the next level for your problem. And then how is it that I went from that surgery, which was so torturous and painful and so absolutely ridiculous, that I had to go see another guy and I had him again and I had to do it again? I wanted to kill myself.
Like I said, complex fistula are the most challenging surgeries for colorectal surgeons. Naturally, I have a handful of friends who are colorectal surgeons, and we occasionally discuss some of these cases. We go to national meetings, and you know, everybody presents this data that these complex fistula surgeries, sometimes they have a higher level of recurrence. They're really difficult to do. If the tunnel, the track that goes around from the outside to the inside is curved or deep, the choices you have to make are challenging. So it's just one of those problems that we see that can really be maddening. It can drive you crazy.
So I have said to people that the best way to describe it, people are like, what's wrong with your ass? And I was like, because I was sitting on ass pillows. I had to bring them with me to work. I had to have them in the car. I had all kinds of problems sitting down. So I go to have this second surgery. I had to do it all over again. And I did it. And I described it to people like, and I know this is wrong, but this is how I described it. I said, it was like the Colorado and the Little Colorado rivers, how they split. One's big and one's little. That I had basically an ass canal that was just like that, that my ass had split in two, and then I was telling people that it was basically carving my cable. Like, in, I told people that it was carving my cable. Like, you know, the guy at the store, and you ask him, can I get a pound of honey roasted turkey? And he's in there yanking off slices. He you want it thin sliced? So I was telling people that when I took a cable, that I was actually, mine was splitting down the middle, and one went down the Little Colorado and one went down the Big Colorado. And that was how I described to people the ass problems that I was having. What you're suggesting is that it was much more dangerous and complex than that. Why did I have recurring fissures and fistulas? Why couldn't the first guy get it done? Why did I have to go back? Now listen, this is just the beginning. I'm on number two now. I haven't even gotten to the point where you did it. I think I had four surgeries and I've had four fluoroscopies. I've had eight total procedures done on my ass, which is like record-breaking ass procedure, like all time. I'm top 10 all-time ass surgery. I'm the king of ass surgeries. You know, one of the comforting things in my life, Greg, was that Howard Stern had fissures. So we would share our ass misery stories with one another. I think that was why he liked me, because I had the same ass problems as him.
So I will tell you, actually, your analogy is pretty good about the Colorado River. So what fistulas are these little tributaries that go off of the side of the main canal. And the problem is, if you imagine, trying to close off a tributary is really challenging, right? You can't just fill it in. Basically, what we do is we cut it open.
It was like a dam.
We cut it open on each side, or we cut the whole thing open, or we try to put a flap of something over it. And the problem
is, like a bridge.
Yeah. So imagine just closing off the opening to this tributary and cleaning it out so everything goes out the back end and the front end heals up completely and it seals. And the problem with that is, after you do that surgery, you're still moving your bowels. You still got poop coming out right around this area.
That is awesome. I just like hearing about poop.
Imagine any surgery you had. Any surgery you had, you say, well, you know, I'm just going to wipe some poop on this scar and see if that'll help it heal. So when you're pooping past this, it's a hard area to keep clean. Now, it's an amazing area. Well, it's an amazing area that it heals. But besides the poop, there's a pressure gradient. There's all kinds of really complicated stuff goes on down
there. So the second doctor, who you know as well, because he took it to the next level, and he described to me, because I was like, can you speak in layman's terms, doctor? I was like, can you just explain it to me, a little simpler version of what you're doing inside my ass tracker? And the guy would look at me like I was crazy. The first doctor, as you know, was an old man.
I think he retired. You might have pushed him right to retirement.
After he had my ass surgery, he wanted to kill himself, so he quit instead and moved to Florida. Now he's a senior golfing champion at the country club. So then the second guy was another high-level guy, and the way he described it to me was, the first guy said, listen, what's going to happen is your wife's going to shove a golf club in your ass every night with ointment on it, and she's going to scoop out She's going to scoop out all of your cable. The best thing that's happening right now is three women just walked by my Barella Palatial, and all three of them had their necks turned completely listening to every word of me talking about shoving golf clubs in my ass. And that now is a topic of discussion in the neighborhood by these women. And I'm certain of that. And I'm glad, because I hope that I scare all of them. I don't want to know them as neighbors or friends. They are not my friends. And they are not as important as me, because my ass is very important. All right, so the first guy said to me, you're going to have to stick a 56-degree wedge in your ass every night and fix it. And so I did all that. Then it came back. So the second doctor said to me, as you know, a lot younger and more savvy, he had a bigger practice, and he said, what we're going to do is we're going to build a bridge. We're going to have a dam, and we're going to build a bridge in your ass. And that bridge is going to be the key to you avoiding these fissures and fistulas into the future. So he goes, I'm building a dam in your ass. And I said, have at it, doctor. I went under the knife again, full surgery, no joke. This was not same day stuff. This was, you're going to be here for a couple days. So the guy went in, you saw what he did to me. Did he build a dam or bridge, or did he build the Bridge of Navarone, which collapsed in the war?
He built a bridge over the River Kwai.
It wasn't exactly Navarone. It was over the River Kwai, because I had certainly plenty of flowing problems in my...
Well, I remember the River Kwai was that dark, nasty brown river, right?
It was. It was the River Kwai. You've heard me talk about the River Kwai on my show for many years. The River Kwai is the river of love. And I think Bruce Springsteen sang about it. The Tunnel of Love. That was the song he wrote about Pharrell's ass, wasn't it?
Right. But the bridge over the River Kwai blew up. And you blew it up, either going to the bathroom or chronic scar tissue, a lot of things. And that's what is frustrating about fistulas is, you know, you blow it up and then somebody else got to come in and fix it again. And every time you go back to fix it again, it's more complicated than the last one. And it can drive you crazy as a colorectal surgeon. Now we've gotten a little better. Now with MRIs and with some of the newer techniques, we've gotten a little better at solving these.
So after my second surgery, which was also just absolutely grueling, when I got out of the hospital, I was a complete, utter mess. I was in agony. I was crying. I mean, it was so painful that I was crying. I literally screamed to God to take me. Take me away, Calgon.
So don't forget, there's no pain like ass pain, as I said.
There is no pain like... like ass pain. No wonder I love Vicodin. Here we go.
Every patient I've ever done hemorrhoid surgery on who's had open heart surgery would sign up for their open heart again in a minute.
Really?
But yeah, rectal pain down there. It's a very sensitive spot, tons of nerve endings. It hurts. It hurts a lot. My favorite line, any of my patients who will hear this podcast have heard this, forget the water board. I could make those guys talk. You bring me to Guantanamo and they will sing like canaries.
So what you're saying is that most people can't take the ass pain. They just can't take it.
No, and so patients who I have, if they have colon cancers or if they have other major colon problems, they're all wonderful and appreciative and really gracious. But the patients who have had long-standing rectal pain, who you operate on and fix, they would erect a statue outside their house of you if they could.
Well, because it was the worst, dude. I have to tell you. So when I came to you, the dam broke. And so my boy, he just didn't fix it. So bottom line is, the first guy, it was bad. And then he fixed it, and then it came back. He said, I can't do this. I have to send you to a specialist. The specialist says, I'm going to build you a bridge, a dam that's going to handle this problem. That'll be the end of it. And then that failed, and then I had him again. And so they sent me to the best, which is you. So those guys don't like to admit that you're the best. They think they're going to solve it. And then when they don't solve it, they know they have to send you to the best. So I end up with you. And then when you went down on me, doctor, when you went down on me and you saw in the computer images of the MRI of my ass, what did you see? What kind of damage did you see?
So, well, two things. First of all, there was a lot of scar tissue from your previous surgeries. It is what it is. We knew that was going to be there. And second is, I think you had two separate fistulas. I think you had what's called a superficial one, doesn't dive deep through the muscle, that we wound up cutting open. And then another one that I think we did this newer procedure where we separated the muscles and tied it off. And thank God it worked, because, you know, with the scar tissue you had and the number of chronic infections in the previous surgeries, it was literally a crapshoot that we were going to get this done.
These are the great Dr. Galena lines, the crapshoot, no pun intended.
Are you ready for the nation's first and only free 24-hour network dedicated to you, the betting and fantasy sports enthusiast? SportsGrid will provide you with real-time content, statistics, and gaming intelligence unlike anything you've ever seen before. Located both in the heart of New York City and inside the FanDuel Sportsbook at the Meadowlands, SportsGrid is live 18 hours a day, here to serve you, the fanatic. This is SportsGrid. Get on the grid.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you, because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I have talked to people on the air many times. If you've heard this story of me discussing the third ass surgery that you performed on me, really was the end game. And the bottom line is, I tell people that you finally just flat out removed my rectum and put in a rubber $6 million man rectum, that you had actually replaced fully my rectum, and that you put in a slip and slide rubber Steve Austin rectum. In layman's terms, am I in the ballpark in terms of creativity talking about what you did to fix my rectum? You basically put in a slip and slide rectum.
Well, sure. I'll give you some artistic license. But basically, right, it went from a torture chamber to you being able to go to the bathroom, right?
You definitely fixed my ass.
So however you describe that, I say it's okay.
So when you fixed it, and I went in there and had this surgery, and you were done, and you wiped your hands and washed them clean, and you walked away, and then I woke up from being under, and I was in my hospital room, and you came in and said to me, I think you're good to go. It's a done deal. Your problems are over. You really felt that it was over? Because I had already had them come back twice, like an ex-wife. Like, they just came back and haunted me, like lawsuits and like a divorce lawyer or some kind of stalker. I had fistula stalkers.
Honestly, it takes about 6 weeks to be really sure. So I was nervous, walking on eggshells, being like, oh my God, I hope I fix this, you know, otherwise I'm going to be known as the guy who screwed his ass up again. So I was hoping not to be that guy.
What is the difference between fissures and fistulas?
So fissures are actually usually easier to take care of. We see occasionally some really bad cases. A fissure is a tear at the opening.
It's like a cut.
A cut. If somebody has a really hard bowel movement, they'll tear open their opening. And most people...
I mean, you have to have just like a cable of the century. Is that like a hard constipation cable that would tear it open? You're talking about the thing before with the popcorn kernels. What was that called again?
Diverticulitis.
Is that like a diverticulitis type cable where you cable so hard and you have constipation cable where you have like hard, rocky cable that would tear a cut in your colon, in your canal?
Yeah, there's two ways that'll occur. One is you get really constipated and you don't go, or you hold it in, or you wait, or you don't drink enough water, whatever problem you have, you eat too much cheese, and then you got to push and you see the stars and you feel like, holy moly, what happened? And the other way is patients who, they get a bad bug or they have this chronic colitis or something where they go to the bathroom 15, 18 times in a couple of days and just the traffic burns a hole, literally.
What would you say is like... What would you say a bad a bad stretch would be? A two-day stretch of, like, how many cables would you consider a bad stretch, like a bad run?
Yeah, patients with that kind of problem will have, like, 25 bowel movements in 2 days. 12, 15 a day.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
And then you just have swamp ass.
Well, it's just like the Lincoln Tunnel, right? Too much traffic, the road starts to pock up and potholes.
So what happens? People get so raw down there that literally when they go, it's like a blast furnace in a steel mill.
Well, and the thing is, when you have too much diarrhea, it's acidic. So it's like acid coming on an open sore again and again and
again. So it's like sandpaper on a cut.
Exactly.
Because that's what it felt like to me.
Right. It felt like somebody put, instead of the golf club you were talking about, it felt like somebody put some fire up there. Right?
Yeah. It was the worst thing ever that I've ever experienced. Are you surprised that my wife, 34C, didn't leave me after having to treat my ass after multiple surgeries with the various medicines and ointments and nightly dance with the devil? She had to go into my ass on a nightly basis three different times in our marriage. She really got to know me, almost like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. She knew. She knew me inside and out. You talk about the chocolate egg at Easter. I mean, I was the Hershey Highway to her. Just the most wonderful human being in her life. She knew me better than anyone, and it was just chocolate thunder. Thunder Road.
So you must be some sort of awesome guy, because I know your wife a little bit, and she must really love you, because it is a level of separate intimacy to be putting some kind of medical device in somebody's rectum. Could you define love at a deeper level than that?
No, and that's the most embarrassing thing ever. Now, when you do this, and you're in the operating room, and you have all these assistants with you, like surgical assistants and, you know, nurses.
Surgical residents, sometimes students, sometimes physician's assistants, yes.
Did you ever operate on my ass and have students in the room to learn about my rectum?
I'm pretty sure we've had medical student definitely at least one time, and there's always one, the surgical trainees, a surgical resident in the room who's training.
So when I got done with my third surgery on my ass, I ended up having to have a fourth one to see how everything was doing. What was that, like about a year or two after that one? To see how it was holding up?
Yep.
And what was that? What do they call that? You just said, we need to go in there and make sure everything's up to snuff.
Well, yeah. The last one was just, there was some scar tissue and there was a little bit of a superficial part of that fistula left that I just wanted to open up and make sure that it finished healing, because I was afraid with your history that you'd recur. So that's why we did the last one.
So I had four surgeries on my ass, and then I had four furelenoscopies.
Well, your colonoscopies are for two reasons. One is, you know, you have this history of all these problems, and every time a new one crops up, most of us would be like, well, let's do a scope and make sure that there's not some underlying problem causing this. And thank God we've not found that. But you've also had colon polyps, if I'm okay talking about
that. Yeah, let's talk about my polyps. Is that like having a piece of popcorn stuck in your throat? What
no,
is it?
So a polyp is kind of like a little growth on the inside of the intestine.
Ooh.
And they come in various shapes, sizes, and types. And
ooh,
what's most important for you is,
ooh,
if I remember right, and you said it was okay to talk about this.
Yes.
So you had three polyps, I think. Two were what are completely benign. They never turn into a problem. They're extremely common. We don't worry about.
Ooh.
But one of them was one of the ones, ooh, that if ignored could turn into cancer.
Ooh.
and I took it out. You've had that before you met me. I think you had a couple of those, and you have family history. So you're somebody who we're going to continue to know each other really well. I think I
So every 3 years since I've known you now, so for 12 years, you've done 4 of them.
Right. And I think next one is in 2 because of the last polyp I took off. And so now in our house, we could eventually talk about the Pharrell annuity.
So because my sister had it and my dad had it, my grandpa had it, I'm sure his did too, and everything else, you're saying that these polyps and these bad things are high rate of return and also high risk for cancer.
Yeah, I'd put you in the elevated, not the true high risk group, patients who have 10, 15, 20 polyps or some of these higher, kind of more advanced polyps would be worse than you. But yeah, 2 or 3 years is when you need to come back, because they usually take 5 to 8 years to grow into a colon cancer, but there's a small chance you could miss them if they're really small, or you take one out and you think it's a benign one and you get the pathology back and it turns out to be a precancerous one. So I always err on the side of being slightly more aggressive, where I wouldn't let you go probably more than 3 years.
What about when you have these phorelinoscopies that you have on me? Has my ass gotten worse, better, regressed each time? Is it the same? Is it more problematic? Where am I after 4 of them? Because you've basically cleared me 4 times of anything major. You're just like, everything seems to be under control here. I'll see you in 3 years.
Well, it's been kind of up and down. Like, I remember once we had none of these polyps that had precancerous cells, and then the last time we did.
Well, how do I get those? What is happening?
Know. So we know that about maybe 10% of colon cancers fit into a true genetic profile.
Right.
And about 1/4 of the colon cancers, we know people in families tend to get them, but we don't know what the genes are. And then 2/3 of colon cancers, we don't know why people get polyps and cancer. And that's why we do the test. That's why we go in there and check. And if you have a polyp, we biopsy it. We tell you when to come back. I'm going to get on my soapbox for a second, but it's a disease that's preventable. We estimate if everybody got colonoscopies at the normal interval, we could prevent 90%, 95% of colon cancers. Instead, we see patients who have it, like your friend who had a really severe case, and patients who come in and need major treatment and major surgery and bags and all this stuff. And, you know, we just need to do a really good job of screening so we can prevent people from
having cancer. I knew a chick that had it. She died at 41 with it, and my sister had it. When should they start getting phorelinoscopies?
Yeah, it's actually a controversial point right now, which is right now the recommendation is if you have no symptoms and you're a healthy person, come in at 45. If you have any family history, any symptoms, bleeding, stomach pains, change in the way you go to the bathroom, pretty much anything over the age of 30 should have a scope. And we see that colon cancer in the 30 to 50 population group has increased significantly. Why are young people getting colon cancer? I don't know. We don't really know, but we know it's there. The age used to be 50. 2 years ago, the American Society of Gastroenterology and our society, American Cancer Society, dropped it to 45. I firmly in my heart believe it's going to be 40. I know I've told you, I've told your wife. By the time you turn 40, you should think about having a colonoscopy.
All right. So let's say you said 30, you should do it. If you have any problems at all, do it. If you don't, let's say you start doing it at 40. Do you still do it on an every 3-year basis? What is the biggest problem with people not wanting to do that? Because they're lazy? Or is it because they go through that experience once where they have to do the barium enema on a Sunday night, and at 7 o'clock they drink that cocktail, and then what, an hour later they start having just the worst night of their life? Because when you drink that, you blow ass literally 20 times like a fire hydrant. You blow like a fire hydrant for literally what, 6-8 hours?
Something like that.
It's the worst. Is that why people don't want to do it?
Hard to say.
Or do they just never want to get checked because they just don't think that they could ever get it?
I don't think they don't think they can ever get it. I think that there's a lot of reluctance to have somebody else look at your rear end. It's one of those things. People get shy about it. And people say, oh, the prep is tough. And the prep is challenging. I've had 3 myself, so I know all about it. Most patients, I give the same exact prep I've had unless they have a medical condition that stops them from getting that prep. So I think it's a lot of things. But the interval between colonoscopies depends on what we find at your scope. So you're at 3 years, A, for family history, B, for seeing polyps that have some of these precancerous cells. You come in, you have a colonoscopy, it's clean. 5 to 10 years is when we tell you to come back, depending again on your age, your history, other symptoms. But it's such an essential test. And unfortunately, until you see somebody you know with colon cancer and the degree they suffer, I don't think it rings true how much you should have the test.
I've manned up. I've done it so many times that I just don't even care anymore. I usually do it on a Monday morning. I'm the first cut of the day. I'm the first fluoroscopy of the day every time I do it.
You're the leadoff hitter.
I'm the leadoff hitter. I'm hitting first. So I do it Sunday night at home, and I do the prep, the barium enema.
The barium enema is a different thing. No, it's a prep.
It's just a drink.
It's a solution of stuff that literally does what you said. It cleans your intestine so that the guy looking can see really well.
Because if he went in and you didn't do that, he couldn't do it. He couldn't do his job.
So think about it. If you can't see, you could miss one of these little things.
Right.
And then you tell somebody, oh, come back 5, 6 years. And I've seen these patients. Then at 3 years, they actually have a cancer. And I give you credit. You're one of those patients who doesn't whine about the prep. Like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, I remember you talking to me about it. Yeah, I know it sucks. Oh, it's, you know, I got to blow my ass out a few times, you know, in that Pharrell voice. But then you just say it. I'm going to do it. You come in and you've done it and you follow the instructions and you have a good test.
And then I do the pharyloscopy. How long does it take you? An hour?
Half hour, 40 minutes. The whole experience in the center is about 2.5 hours.
How many of those have you done, would you estimate, in your career? I mean, think about it. You're running the colorectal, one of the biggest in the country. And how many of those do you do?
I'm going to guesstimate 25,000, maybe.
25,000 of them. So you've seen a lot of asses.
I've seen a lot of asses. Yeah, you know, I do joke about that with my kids. I'll tease them with when they'll say, oh, that's gross. I say, well, my finger was on 7 people's asses this morning. So gross is in the eyes of the beholder.
Let me ask you. I think my son should probably get a pharyloscopy. Or is he too young?
I'm looking at your son now, and I'm thinking he's way too young.
Way too young?
Yeah, I think by the time he's 30, maybe we'll have a discussion, given the lovely genes that you've passed on to him.
Let me ask you. Teams in the area. You have notoriously been what? Giants, Yankees, and Devils.
Yeah, and we talked about Rutgers, yes.
Oh, and you like Rutgers. Fair enough. Rutgers does not count when it comes to this Pharrell on the Bench podcast. They're not worthy. Although I think the basketball team has very good upside, and they have some nice recruits coming in. One of the top players in the country coming to play at Rutgers. Hopefully that'll all come to fruition. But when did your love affair with the Yankees start? Your whole life?
So I grew up in a divided household. My dad was a Mets fan.
What could be worse?
He's a National League guy, you know, back in the day.
Is he still around?
Yeah, he's still around, 86 and doing great.
And he still watches the Mets?
Yeah, he's a glutton for punishment.
And you put up with it?
So I was kind of a Mets fan. And then when I was 15, I said, if the Mets traded Tom Seaver, I'd never root for him anymore.
That's a great move by you.
July 15th, 1977, the Mets traded Seaver, and the Yankees had gotten Reggie that offseason.
Right.
And I had said when they got Reggie, remember he played 1 year with the Orioles. The Yankees got Reggie after the Orioles, and I said, if the Yankees had Reggie Jackson, they're going to win the World Series. And then they won the World Series. I went to the 77 and 78 World Series in the bleachers, sleeping in a hotel lobby waiting for tickets when I was 16.
Well, obviously, those were great World Series. Which one did you like better, 78?
78 was better just because I was in the left field bleachers for the Nettles game,
right,
and you had kind of a unique view of it.
I love Nettles.
I've gotten to meet Nettles. He's a terrific guy.
Remember when he played with the Yankees? He was a badass, and then he ended up with the Padres. You remember?
Yeah, the goofiest baseball card ever.
And then remember Steve Garvey went there, too.
I forgot Garvey. Yeah, Garvey went there, too. Right.
It was crazy. You started going to Yankee games. What did your dad think of that?
You know, he didn't love it.
Did he think you were a backstabber, like you turned on him?
No, they turned on me. They traded the franchise. And I don't know if I'd still be a Mets fan if they never traded Seaver.
Did you argue with your dad for the rest of your life then when it came to the Mets and the Yankees? Did he say, you used to be a Met fan, I don't know what happened to you, then you started operating on everybody's rectums? Did he give you the business?
He's sympathetic to the... He's been married for like 63 years to a Yankee fan.
So your mother is a Yankee fan.
Yep.
So she obviously loves you more than your father.
Obviously. Well, I'm an Italian son. What could be better?
Did you ever go to Yankee games with her?
No, you know, I've never been to a Yankee game with my mom, actually. I've been to...
Why is that?
I don't know.
She never wanted to go to the Bronx?
Yeah, I don't think she wants to go to the stadium. She's not kind of her thing. I've gone with my uncle and my godfather to a Yankee game. I've been to actually Citi Field with my dad, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, no one cares about that place.
Want to light the lamp on DraftKings and FanDuel this NHL DFS season? Then join DailyRoto.com and learn from the best daily fantasy sports players. Get updated fantasy hockey projections for NHL DFS, line combinations, and build stacks for tournaments in the Daily Roto NHL DFS lineup optimizer. If you are playing daily fantasy hockey without using Daily Roto, you are doing it wrong. Enter the promo code ACTION for a 10% discount. That's promo code ACTION for a 10% discount.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
When they moved to the new stadium, did you dislike it? Because I don't like it. I like the old one.
First of all, you tore down like the Vatican.
Right. But it was falling apart.
It was. It was time. It needed either a major structural overhaul, but it's hard to go. I like baseball. I've been to a lot of stadiums, and going to the new Yankee Stadium has that.
Who did you like? Did you like Guidry? Did you like Gossage? They had so many. Rigetti.
First of all, I loved Gossage.
I love Gossage.
He'd come out on the mound, and during his warm-ups, he'd always throw one like 8 feet to the side of one side at like hardly looking, and the batters would be like, he doesn't know where that damn ball's going.
He's going to kill him.
He was very intimidating, and he knew it, and I was like,
so you liked Reggie, too? Did you like Winfield and those guys when they got...
Not a Winfield guy, although in retrospect, I think Winfield got kind of a bum
rap.
Did
you like Mickey Rivers?
I loved Mick. Right. How do you not like Mickey Rivers?
Right.
I love Mick.
Who were your other favorite players? Anything you can think of?
I love Donnie Baseball.
You love Mattingly. Yeah, did you like Mattingly Thurman guy. Munson?
And... Yeah, I loved Munson. I have a Munson picture in my den. You know, I was a Munson fan. I thought he was one of the greats.
So when you talk to me about the Yankees and such and going to World Series games and rooting for all these great players, how difficult is it when you get text messages about people's rectums the whole time you're talking to me? You went from talking about Mickey Rivers and Greg Nettles to talking about some woman's fissures. Do you find that to be a distraction when you're trying to focus on the great 27 world championships of the Bombers?
It's what I signed up for. So no, yeah, actually, as we're sitting here, one of my surgical residents is texting me about a consult in the emergency room with somebody who has an abscess and possibly a fistula. And when I leave here, I'm going to go look at her MRI and figure out what she needs done. But it's my career. It's my profession. It's what I chose. I still enjoy it even after 22 years.
How do you keep track of all the 50 million phone calls you get and all the different asses? There's a lot of ass problems.
There are. You know, fortunately, the new computer system has all the patients on it usually at the hospital, so I can just sort them and figure out who's who. But yeah, you know, there are notes on my iPhone, and don't ever flip through my photos on my phone.
Wow, I'll bet. How many doctors and nurses work for you in that practice? Because when I'm in there having my ass surgery, they know me by first name basis. They just say, Pharrell, and then they know my ass. Everyone there knows my ass. Like, certain nurses wink at me because, you know, they've been down there and yonder. They've been, you know, as they say in Australia, down under. They know everything that goes on in my underpants. How many work for you?
So only a couple work in my office, but there's dozens at work at the hospital, the surgery center. I couldn't even count how many. And, you know, so now you're not just a radio legend, you're a rectal legend.
So in other words, I'm a rectal legend at the surgery center where you actually perform the ass surgeries.
Correct.
So there is an office where you see patients and then there's a place you go to operate on them.
That's right. My office, I just examine patients. I'll see them, I'll diagnose them, but I don't do actual surgeries. Some minor procedures I'll do in the office, but surgeries usually do with an anesthesiologist at one of the centers I work at.
Why is it that my prostate doctor is different than you in that he goes into my ass as well? And it is not a pleasant exchange. When he goes in there, he means business. He goes in there and just absolutely grabs that thing and just spins it like a revolver. What is going on? What is the difference? Why is it that you can't handle these things for me?
So it's actually a really good anatomy question. It's like a medical student anatomy question. So your prostate sits right in front of the rectum. It's a whole different part, though. It's part of your urinary system and your reproductive system, right? It's not part of your gastrointestinal system. But it sits in such a spot that the greatest way to examine it is putting a finger in your rear end. Unfortunately, when you're examining the prostate, you got to really give it a good feel. So it's probably, yeah, a little bit more rigorous exam than I give you, even because
it's way more painful.
He is looking for the works. He's looking for gold now.
And does he do it with two or three fingers? How do they do it?
Six. No, just kidding.
Wow. It feels like six.
It feels like
it's no joke. When they go in there, they mean business. I mean, it is a very unpleasant 20 seconds.
Yeah, it's one maximum ever is two fingers. And, you know, I do a very cursory exam of the prostate when I examine. I just feel the feel if there's something terrible.
But when you go into the ass, you go around the prostate into a deeper cavern.
When I put a scope in, yeah.
But when you deal with my fissures and fistulas and hemorrhoids, what's the difference between a fissure and a hemorrhoid?
So a hemorrhoid is like a...
It's like a shrimp.
Don't eat that shrimp.
It's a shrimp that's on fire!
So hemorrhoid is kind of a sort of a varicose vein of the rectum. It's just an enlarged vein. We think that they were originally put there to be cushioned. So when you move your bowels, it doesn't hurt like hell because you have these big hemorrhoids there that are cushions there that'll kind of absorb the shock.
So you're saying that everyone has them?
Everyone has them. Natural part of the
anatomy. So you have a natural hemorrhoid in your ass no matter what, every day. And then why is it that some people... they start crying about hemorrhoids and they run to the pharmacy for the preparation H. Does that stuff work?
Some of the over-the-counter stuff works, some doesn't.
Why do they get crazy, those things? It's like an electrical short. It's like you're on fire. I mean, what is the deal with those things? They are evil.
Well, a lot of us think that we've probably lived longer than the body was really designed for. So you get a little older and these things kind of swell up. Our diet's also way different than it was 2,000 years ago. When people would eat
like an elk.
Branches, right? Exactly. No, but there were branches and berries and leaves. And so they would be able to pass their feces without a problem. They sit down, poop, it pops out. But we eat a lot of processed food. You sit on the toilet, and a toilet's not a great thing either. It's got a circle. You're just sitting there putting all the pressure on there. So we think that that makes your hemorrhoids enlarge and become irritating.
Have you seen the, what is the potty thing?
Squatty potty.
Do you believe in that?
I certainly don't think it hurts. I think that if you don't have a pre-existing problem and you're able to sit and move your bowels easily, it's not necessary. But it certainly doesn't hurt and it maybe help a little bit, yeah.
Who do you think invented the thing where it's like a stool and it lifts your knees up toward your chin and it makes you just pop one out quicker?
Well, it makes you look like Cro-Magnon Man when he would squat in the cave.
What is it? Do it just squeezes down on your ass, or what is it, your rectum?
No, it changes the angle of your pelvis. It kind of straightens out how your rectum sits to be able to move your feces.
Why, how does it normally sit?
So if you sit straight up, you're not going to be able to poop, right? If you sit erect, you're not going to be able to poop because the angle that your rectum sits at to open at is not right. So it's actually, without getting into too much detail, the physiology of moving your bowels, amazing. Like 20 things have to happen.
So I have to ask you a question. So I was playing basketball and I took a charge and I landed really badly on my tailbone. And when it happened, I was in agony. I felt like I had been gang raped. I was in agony. I was literally paralyzed with pain, like numb. I felt like I had been gang raped with an elephant trunk. And I was in agony. And they said, here, let me help you up. I said, no, don't touch me. I laid on the ground. I got up and I kept playing. No problem. I was like, all right, I'm all right. Let's go. And the adrenaline, I kept playing. But I swear to God, it happened like 2 months ago. And my tailbone still hurts when I sit down. If I sit down on my tailbone for like an hour or two and watch television and I try to get up, I feel this gigantic pain in my tailbone. What do you think? Can you actually break your tailbone or something?
Yes, you can. It's much more common to do what you probably did, which is bruise it. And you might have even like kind of mildly dislocated it. And it's one of those spots every single day you put pressure on it. And if it's bruised, you kind of irritate it a little bit. So a bruised coccyx, that's the tailbone, a bruised coccyx or a fractured coccyx.
How do you deal with it?
It's a nuisance. It's just, you know, normally non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, you know, your Motrins, your Advils, etc. But we have patients who have chronic coccygeal pain. Very rarely they need the bone removed because it's a big operation. It's a bit, you know, of a challenging operation, mostly done by orthopedic surgeons.
Is it strictly just a thing that time heals the bruise?
Yeah, it usually will heal.
But when I like wipe my ass, it hurts.
It's probably just the way you position your body when you're wiping.
Right.
I don't think it's your ass that's hurt. I hope not, because, you know, there's a lot of work down there.
I've had a lot of problems with my ass.
Yeah, we don't want to dent the
cataract. So I really hurt it bad, and it's never healed normal.
It might take up to 6 months for it to go away completely.
Wow. That's really bad news, Doc.
Sorry.
That's really, really bad news. All right, let me ask you this question. I was talking the other day with one of your favorite players of your whole life on my Coast to Coast TV show on Sports Grid was Ken Danico. And he was telling me that of the three Stanley Cups that they won, that the one against Dallas Stars with two double overtime and one triple overtime game was the hardest Stanley Cup to win against the defending champion Dallas Stars with Hull and all those guys, Medano. When they beat Detroit, they swept them. And then when they beat the Ducks, they beat them in seven. Which one did you like the most, and what did you think of those three Stanley Cups, and what did you think of Danico?
I like Danico. I've met him actually a couple times. He goes to some fundraiser that I go to every year, and he's there often, and he's very affable, nice guy, approachable. For me, the third cup was the best, and it's personally because I was there. I had a partial devil's plan back in those days. I was at the third cup, and I was there with my brother-in-law, my two nephews, my two godsons. So it was really a lot of fun. It was a family experience. And what the Devils did, and the Devils were always a very good organization for their fans, is if you had a partial plan, they won the cup, you got to go to get your picture taken with the cup when it was there later in the year.
Oh, that's great.
They're adults, my nephews, but picture my two nephews with the Stanley Cup. And the third one, game seven at home, really exciting.
And Danico got benched in games five and six.
Was he a DNP?
Yeah, and then they played him in game seven. Burns played him, and they won the game.
Yeah, I still think one of the great robberies of all time was not giving Martin Brodeur the Conn Smythe that year. I mean, Brodeur's goals against in the playoffs was like, you know, 1.04.
Do you like the hockey better than the Yankees?
No, I think, you know, football is probably my favorite sport.
So the Giants are your favorite team?
Yeah, the Giants are my favorite. It's tough.
Of all the teams that you root for, the number one team is the New York Football Giants?
Well, part of it is, you know, with my schedule, 16 games a year. It's why football is the most popular sport, is because you can see and spend time and delve into every football game. You can't do that with baseball or hockey unless it's like, you know, a sportscaster.
Too busy, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But on Sundays, you just make it a priority.
So what happened was I had signed up to be in a Giants season ticket holder list probably 25 years ago. And then we had some tickets from a friend of the family, or my dad had somebody who used to go sit in their seats, but then the guy died and didn't specify in his will, so we stopped going. But then when they put the new stadium up with the PSLs, my wife's uncle couldn't afford the PSLs. So he said, listen, if you pay for them, I'll transfer them when they come available. So then we started going, since the new stadiums were open, we would go most Sundays. And it was a special thing. That was my thing with my dad. And my dad, like I said, is now 86. So from his late 70s to his early 80s, those 8 Sundays a year were our time.
Do you still go to Giants games? Do you own the season tickets?
I own the PSLs and the tickets, and we still go. He didn't go this year. His health has not been terrific. I'm hoping if there's sports and if we can sit there, we'll be able to.
How many seats you got, 2 or 4?
I have 3, actually.
Oh, I have 3.
So I had 2. And then the one next to me was open, and it was on the railing for the tunnel.
Right.
And I was like, that's great. Nobody ever sits there.
So they're right in the end zone?
Right in the end zone.
So mine are in the end zone, too. I have Steelers season tickets. So, you know, the Steelers are playing the Giants this year at MetLife.
Oh, maybe I know a third guy who want to come sit with us then.
You know what I mean?
You know, yeah, you know. Although you probably get those fancy seats in the club
section.
No,
I went to the Jets-Steeler game last December, and the Steelers had like 2 first downs. The whole game was the worst game I ever seen in my life.
Jets beat them, right?
The Jets beat them. It was the worst game I've ever been to in my life, and it cost me $1,500. I gave it to my son for a birthday present. It was the worst mistake of my life. The Steelers laid an egg. They had Duck Dynasty playing quarterback that day. Delvin Hodges. It was the worst nightmare of my life. Listen, you're an incredible doctor, an incredible surgeon, incredible friend. I can't thank you enough for talking about the Pharrell Ass Chronicles on the Pharrell on the Bench podcast. You're a leader of men, a leader of rectums, a leader of Pharrell and Oscar. Everyone should get their colonoscopy. Everyone should do it. If you've had problems at all with your, let's say, bowels or anything else, stomach issues, start doing it at 30. If you haven't had any problems, it's a good idea to start doing it at 40. If you haven't done it by 45, you're a loser. You need to get it done. Is that about right?
That's about right. That's perfect.
All right, so everybody get a colonoscopy, women and men.
It's like 52-48 men, so yeah, it's pretty much 50-50. If you're a woman, you think it's not going to happen to you, you're wrong.
You need to get it done even if you're a woman. So these women say, I'm not going to get it. Don't worry about me. Meanwhile, my sister got it. And then my other friend was 41, a woman. She died of it.
Everybody.
So everybody has a bum.
Yeah, unless you have no hole. If you have a hole, you should get it done.
I'm lucky I have anything after all my surgeries.
Slip and slide.
So you've performed 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That's 5. 5 on my ass. That's pretty good. You're 5 for 5. I mean, you're on fire. You're like Reggie Jackson.
Chris Mullin at the line.
You're Patrick Elias. I mean, you got it all going. Marty Brodeur. Hey, Doc Galena, it's awesome having you on the podcast. Thanks, brother. I love you. Thanks for coming by the Pharrell Palatial and talking about my rectum.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
I don't look forward to seeing you the next time you're inside my ass.
You won't be seeing me.
All right. Hey, try not to leave me any of those prep drinks before then either. I don't want to have one of those slipped in my jimmy and have a bad Sunday night if I don't have to. Let me know the next time I have to have my ass worked on. Good to see you, doctor.
Stay well, my brother. Thank you so much.
All right, there he is, Dr. Greg Galena, the best ass doctor in the world on the FOTB podcast. Shake it.
Want to be the next Daily Fantasy Millionaire? Dunk on your NBA DFS competition with DailyRoto.com and dominate on FanDuel and DraftKings this season. Compete with the pros with DailyRoto.com, Optimizer, and the most accurate projections in NBA DFS, plus lineup alerts, breaking news, late swap support, and much more. Save 10% on winning NBA DFS advice with promo code DUNK. Visit DailyRoto.com/dunk to learn more.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.